AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. And we are one day away from the College World Series. And as you're listening to this podcast, actually, happy College World Series Day. It's here. What's up?
Yeah, it's the best time of year, one of, at least on my personal baseball calendar. You have the College World Series. We have the draft a little under a month away. It's pedal to the metal. So there's going to be a lot of fun stuff over the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, this really feels like the time of year where I have just come up for air, I should say. I know we're still in kind of the final stages of design and production for the draft preview issue of the magazine, which we teased the cover of on MLB Network this week. So you can see the Charlie Condon draft preview cover online if you're listening to this and you missed it. It looks pretty sweet. But most of the work that I need to do for that is done. So at this point, I'm kind of like looking ahead, seeing what else we need to do to put the finishing touches on this year's draft class. The travel is starting to come up. Next week, I'll be at the draft combine. USA Baseball has some events with the college national team for the 2025 class and 18U team coming up over the next month or so. The draft itself, like you said, is basically a month away from now. There's a lot of things happening, and it's a very busy time of year, but also an exciting one because for both of us, like, really a year's work. I mean, you're focused on college and draft. I'm focused on draft and also obviously keeping up with the college game. But like, with the World Series being here, with the draft being so close, it's like, this is what we've done it all the whole year for. This was all those off season previewing podcasts, talking about teams and talking about what rosters would look like and talking about draft prospects and who would stand out. And it's all kind of coming to a head here. So that's fun. When you get people reaching out who mostly don't care about the draft and they're asking you draft questions, you know, it's getting close.
Yeah. It's a really fun culmination of everything. Like you said, I think you summed it up really well. So, you know, we've got just 10 or so days, 10 to 14 days left of the college season. And then it's crazy. Like, you know, that's it. It feels like every single year, especially now since I've hopped on at BA, this is my second college season now. It just flies by. It's unbelievable, but hopefully the off season moves just as quick.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, let's get into some of these players in the College World Series to know. I feel like I don't want to start on a down point, but I feel like we probably should talk about Brandon Montgomery's season-ending injury. He would have been, and I guess he still is, the top-ranked draft prospect in the field this year. I don't know if it's quite as strong of a draft prospect field compared to 2023, just in terms of like the impact players who made the finals. I think just the cachet of Dylan Cruz and Wyatt Langford and Paul Skenes, like that trio is hard to beat in terms of just top-end talent that people care about. But I actually do feel like the College World Series field this year is pretty impressive. I mean, just looking over all of our players that we have ranked for these eight teams, there are 16 players who make up the top 100. And then if you just expand to College World Series players on the BA 500, it's 37 players of that field. And maybe just the fact that it is half ACC, half SEC, you probably know it's going to be pretty prospect laden. I think the College World Series most years is probably pretty heavily prospect laden. But I do think with some of the dynamics in college baseball, the transfer rules, just how the power feels like it's been shifting in college baseball, it has become a better and better event for people who are specifically focused on draft prospects. Like, there are no shortage of players, although, again, number five and one of our two top 10 prospects, along with Jack Caglione, not playing is a bit of a bummer. But I guess just general thoughts on the field, and then we can get into Brandon Montgomery's injury.
I think you hit on it first. Like, I don't think I mean, last year was unbelievable. If the listener recalls, I mean, we had Dylan Cruz, Paul Skeens, Rhett Lauder, Brock Wilkin, Wyatt Langford, Jack Caglione, Tommy White. You know, you could go on and on and on. Like, UVA had guys, and I'm sure I'm leaving a handful of notable names out, but it was a really, really special field in terms of the draft talent and then also how the games played out and transpired. And
yeah,
while I don't know if there is, like you said, that front end talent, you know, Caglione and, or excuse me, Condon and Bazzana are not, they got
so close, but not quite. And JJ Weatherholt as well. I guess we could throw in Wake Forest too, with a couple of top tens and Chase Burns and Nick Kurtz.
Yeah. And, like, there was a chance for it to be really, really deep, but I'm still excited for a lot of these guys in the field, you know, with Cags and James Tibbs has become a personal, like, major cheese ball for me. I don't really know if you could even throw him in cheese ball territory because of
we need to find a term for when your personal cheese ball has graduated and is now too good to be a cheese ball. We'll have to find a term. I'll talk with some of the old legacy BA types. I'll hit up John and Jim and see if there's a new term we can coin, maybe, so you can basically take credit for when your personal cheese balls have eclipsed cheese ball status.
Exactly.
It is a success for you that he can't qualify anymore.
Yeah, no, he's been swinging the bat really, really well, but I'm really curious to see, because it's a point we've talked about a lot. When the lights are at their brightest in Omaha, guys can really solidify, make, improve their stock. And I think a lot of guys in this field fit that mold, whether it's a hitter like Ryan Waldschmidt or, Christian Moore is already going to go really good. But like, if Tennessee wins at all, they're not going to be able to do it without, I think, a standout performance from someone like Billy Amick or Christian Moore or Blake Burke. And similarly with Kentucky, if they go on a run, they're going to need to produce enough offensively, and Ryan Waldschmidt will probably be at the center of that. Same thing with James Tibbs and Florida State. Like, a lot of these guys, I think, are going to see their stock improve by putting their team on their back, for lack of better phrasing, and leading them on a pretty deep run. So, like, there are a number of guys, even just in the top 100 alone, that have a real shot here to, you know, to continue to make a name for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And this player doesn't, I mean, he kind of falls into that Christian Moore, James Tibbs tier of player, in the sense that, like, regardless of what happens in the College World Series, he's going to go pretty good. But I am intrigued with Vance Honeycutt at North Carolina. I wrote about him today in a little bit more depth on the website. You guys can read that piece if you want. But just exploring his profile, because it is such a unique profile, and I think you saw it a little bit in regionals and just prior to UNC getting the College World Series. When Vance Honeycutt is on and hot, he looks like one of the best players in the class. And I know multiple times I've had scouts reach out to me and say that because of Vance Honeycutt's physical tools, his athleticism, his defensive profile, his power output, his speed, that he should be the top player in this class. Like, if you're drawing up a prospect and you're giving them physical tools and you're putting them in an up-the-middle profile, like, how many times in this year's draft class we're lamenting the weaknesses of the class, Peter, have we talked about a lack of up-the-middle profiles? I mean, Vance Honeycutt is that. He is a locked-in defensive center field profile, but at the same time, as soon as he is picked in the top 30 picks, which I think he's got a pretty good chance to go in that range, and I don't think I'm being too aggressive in saying that I expect that to happen, but I do think Honeycutt probably has one of these wider ranges of opinions of players that you're looking at in kind of the 10 to 20 range on our board. If you pick out those players, I would imagine there are some scouts who view Vance Honeycutt as maybe like a fringe top 10 player in the class. Maybe there's some who like legitimately don't like first base profiles and prioritize athleticism in their looks and think he's definitely a top 10 prospect in the class. Like, I don't think that's a consensus opinion, because the big question with Vance Honeycutt is a pure hitting ability. And if and when he goes in the top 30, he will set a new high in the bonus pool era. So that's 2012 to now. For career strikeout rate. His 26.3% career strikeout rate is a huge question. It would top, I think there have been 13 hitters. And so this is college hitters, four-year college hitters, 2012 to now, drafted top 30. There have only been 13 who have had a strikeout rate in their career in college greater than 20%. And Honeycutt would top a list that includes players like Kyler Murray, Hunter Bishop, Bryce Matthews from a year ago, Reggie Crawford, who's a two-way guy, and maybe you don't consider him, but then Spencer Jones in 2022. I remember at the time, Spencer Jones, the big question with him was like, does he strike out too frequently to go inside the first round? The Yankees thought the power was enough. And then right below Spencer Jones on this career strikeout rate leaderboard is Jaron Kendall. And I know throughout the spring, Jaron Kendall is a guy who some scouts have compared to Vance Honeycutt kind of as the warning profile. Like is Vance Honeycutt a Jaron Kendall type who just is going to miss too frequently? So he's a really fascinating profile. I think for the most part, all these guys have kind of shown us who they are as players, but a really loud College World Series performance from Honeycutt after what he did in regionals and supers, I think will only embolden the teams who are really high on him even more.
Oh man, when you said Jaron Kendall, it was like a jump scare. I got like a shiver down my spine.
A lot of teams did the same thing with him.
Yeah, but with Vance, it's so interesting because he's a guy, and I'm sure that a lot of clubs feel this way as well. He's a guy that I've wrestled with and gone back and forth on so much, not only this spring and in his draft cycle, but even dating back to when he was a freshman and kind of projecting on what he would be. And at you said it, and it's like his good and really good looks as good as anyone in this class. Like when he's on, like it's pretty special. And the upside with him is so tantalizing. Like he's probably a 70 defender. And I think the fact that he is at his floor professionally, where he is a legitimate impact defender at the big league level with a fringe bat, I don't really know how appealing that is, but I think that as far as the floor goes, yeah, offensively, the floor with him, I think, is pretty freaking low. But overall, you know, I think the defense can help compensate for a little bit of that. Now, me personally, and I could be a little old fashioned in today's game where it's become more power oriented. You know, you got to be able to drive the ball. And while I do look for that, the lack of hitability with Honeycutt is just, it's really hard for me to look past. And if I was picking in that 10 to 15, 15 to 20 or so range, you know, I'd go with the guy that I think has a more advanced hit tool and who I think is going to, you know, just be a better pure hitter professionally. And I know that might be naive to look past this elite defender, a guy who can really, really run. And, you know, power wise, it's above average to plus as well. And it like upside wise and ceiling wise, he has a chance to be an impactful player with all five tools. And you can't really say that about many players in the draft / anyone in the draft. So I know I could be the low man on Vance, but I'd take him in that, like, if he was around for me in the 20-ish to 25 range, I'd happily pop him and, you know, just say, screw it. Like, I'm going to bet on the upside here. But from that 8 to 20 range, give me a guy who, you know, who can hit a little bit and swing the bat.
Yeah, he is so fascinating. I don't know exactly where I would feel comfortable in taking him. I think I'm not quite as near the, like, I wouldn't say pessimism. Like, I don't think you're any more pessimistic than you should be, just given some of the concerns. But I think I probably would pull the trigger a little bit sooner, just because at a certain point in this range, I run out of players that I'm intrigued with and do have a lot of confidence in their hitting ability. And a lot of those players just don't have the sort of athleticism and upside that Vance offers. And one fascinating thing that I was talking about Vance a lot this last week, just with, like, my brother texted me about Vance Honeycutt because he's like watching him and thought he was so exciting and was like asking where he's going in the mock. And I know a lot of people, like, again, like, this is why this is a fun year for the draft, because a lot of people who are not super locked in year round are getting excited about these players and about the draft. And people are like, oh, is he going in the top five picks? And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, never say never, but I haven't really heard him that high. And they're like, oh, well, why not? Like, he does all these things really well. And like, if you were just watching him in the postseason, yeah, he looks tremendous. And I think just kind of contextualizing the hit risk with him is important. At the same time, I was talking with actually multiple scouts this week about him, and like, they were reaching out and like, just talking about how exciting he is. Like we're talking about here, how fun it is to watch when he's clicking. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, is he ultimately too much of a guess hitter? And both these scouts actually responded and they were like, yeah, they're guess hitters in the majors too. And that made me think and wonder like, I wonder how many big league hitters are actually guess hitters and just either have the physical tools or like you become so good at being a guess hitter. Like when I think of major league hitters, I probably really underestimate the number of them who actually are guess hitters. But then I wonder, like at this point, given the quality of the pitching and how much stuff you face night to night and how many different arms, like at some point, do you almost have to be a guess hitter? So that whole conversation was really fascinating to me. I'm not sure if you have any strong thoughts on the prevalence of guess hitters in the majors, or your thoughts on like which percentage of them are or aren't, or even maybe how you would define a guess hitter from a non-guess hitter. But that was an interesting one. It made me think, like, am I making this more of an issue than it should be? Because Vance will also be probably one of the most impressive power speed producers of this same bonus pool college hitter tier that I'm talking about. And at some point, like the outlier players, yeah, there are real questions in one area, but they also do so much for you in other areas. Kind of like Enrique Bradfield a year ago. We had real questions about his profile because he just did not have the sort of power output that typical first-round outfielders have. But also, most first-round outfielders are not 80-grade runners and 80-grade defenders in center like Bradfield was. And so you get these sort of extreme players who you kind of have to live with the good and the bad of them. And it's just kind of fascinating.
Yeah, to the guess hitter point, it's a fascinating one. And to be quite honest, I haven't really thought about it a whole lot from a major league standpoint, but I feel like everyone to an extent is a little bit of a guess hitter. It's just some are more than others. Like Vance, I think, is more on the one end of the spectrum than someone like a Travis Bezzana is. But like at the end of the day, like you really don't know what the pitcher's throwing. You have a really good feeling. And other guys pick up the ball better than others out of the hand and can see spin. And I think that also contributes to it. So everyone to an extent, but I think where he lacks a little bit is in the pitch recognition skills department, especially when it comes to spin. And that's a common issue for a lot of guys in every draft cycle. But I
wonder too with him, I think you absolutely nailed it in terms of like pitch recognition questions with him. But I also was talking with someone else about Vance. I had like six people text me about Vance Enniquette. Some people in the industry and some people who are just like interested in the game in general. And this person was like, how much movement is going to have to be removed from Vance's swing at the next level? And I wonder if it's like a compounded issue of like pitch recognition questions, an approach that maybe is not as advanced as it should be. And also like mechanically, Vance does have a lot going on. He's got a lot of movement that you might be able to describe as wasted. It's clearly worked for him, but between the lead kick and a hand hitch and like his bat tip, and sometimes the lower half is not really synced up. Like there's a lot of movement. And I'm just very curious, like, what are the conversations like in player development for the team who is going to take Vance Honeycutt? And which of these pieces of his game do they feel confident they can kind of help improve? And which are just like the elements of hitting that are just natural to a hitter and you can't really change them too much? That's all super fascinating to me. And Vance is like the lightning rod for maybe a conversation around player development, which is obviously super fun.
100%. And look, while he, you know, the hands are super quick and it's an unbelievably athletic operation of the box and all of that, when you look past it, like you said, there are some moving parts in there. So I'm curious to see, because whoever takes him is obviously going to be in the mindset of like, okay, we just got ourselves a high impact five to a player. Like they're not going to pick Vance Honeycutt in the 10 to 20 range and not feel like that. So I'm curious to see what they attack first from an offensive standpoint. I think just trying to quiet it down in general and like minimizing the unnecessary movements, kind of trimming the fat, so to speak. I think that's the first plan of attack. Mm-hmm. And then going after, you know, pitch recognition skills against spin, because, you know, when he's at the complex or in low A and he's got a guy throwing 98 at his head and then he rips off a banger slider breaking ball the next pitch, like I just kind of wonder how he's going to be able to handle that. Mm-hmm. So it's he's a really interesting player, and that's not to say he's not a really, really talented player and has a chance to be a very special player when all is said and done, but he's a very tough one, because I think circling back to something you said, where after I was maybe prematurely was like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't take him until the 20 to 25 ish range. But when you get down to it, if the draft goes a certain way, like, you know, him versus a Christian Moore or a Billy Amick, if that's my trio of guys where I'm picking at like 15, 16, 17, I'm probably going Vance, and betting on the upside there. And now, would I take Carson Benj over Vance? Yes. Would I take, like him versus Siver King's another interesting one for me, because I think I might be a little low on Siver King. Like, I'd probably take him over Siver King.
And I think Siver and Vance are both pretty interesting for similar reasons, because Siver has the approach question mark. And again, I think Vance's question mark for me is more like pure contact. I don't have real bat to ball skill questions with Siver to the same degree that I do with Vance. But both Vance and Siver are really high-level athletes with physical tools, up-the-middle defensive profiles. So I think for different reasons, you could probably bucket them in the same like high-risk, high-reward area. So they're kind of fascinating for that. I'm not exactly sure which of those two I would prefer. I think I lean towards Siver because of the contact skills. But I also think in other areas of the game, Vance is a much more advanced baseball player now. Like, Siver King, I think, has the potential to be a good defensive center fielder, but Vance Honeycutt is an impact center fielder right now. It wouldn't be shocking to me if Vance wound up having more usable game power. But, and one last thing about Vance, and you can feel free to pick up on any of these threads I'm kind of dropping and take it where you want, but I acknowledge that I've also spent maybe like 12 minutes talking about Vance Honeycutt here. The fascinating piece about his profile too, in addition to everything we talked about, is he has shown some ability to manage the strikeouts in his career. He's kind of oscillated back and forth between a high strikeout, high home run hitter. And in 2023, he cut the strikeout rate to 20%, which is still high for a first round or top 30 overall college hitter. But he showed the ability to manage that, boost the walks. But he just might be the sort of player who is at his best offensively when he's swinging and missing more, and you're getting a lot more of that impact damage and home run production. So, yeah, really, really fascinating player. And I promise I'm not spending this long on the podcast because Vance is Tar Heel. Although I did see, Peter, that you selected UNC's jerseys 1-1 in you and Teddy's superlatives in College World Series pick'ems post on the site, which I thought was a really good piece.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about Indeed is how much easier it has made the hiring process. Everything I need is all in one place. The ways to contact potential employees, job candidates, all in one place. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. Oracle.com/bandwidth.
Yeah, that was almost as much of a no-brainer 1-1 as Bazana is for me. But no, with Honeycutt against Siver King is also like, that's a very interesting debate, because not to be pessimist Pete here on the pod, but I think I'm also probably like lower on Siver King than others, because with him, you've got this explosive athlete. The bat speed is unbelievable. You know, he's a borderline double plus runner, if not a double plus runner. Elite athlete. I have more hit tool questions than probably others do. Like the pitch recognition skills, and just from what I saw, and granted, I didn't see him play every game. I didn't watch every pitch, but yeah. From what I saw against high level pitching, like there were legit pitch recognition issues. And like it did sometimes, and you'd want to talk about a guess hitter. Like it looked like he had no clue what was coming sometimes. And
yeah. And also with Seaver, his swing decision, I think you nailed it, but his swing decisions, when I watch him early in the year, and I think this is pretty consistent of him, he's one of the more aggressive free swinging types. And I think his ability to put the barrel on the baseball in tough spots in the zone and even outside of the zone almost like enables this approach, because he is able to find success with it. And I'm sure he found a ton of success with it at Division II Wingate, just jumping on baseballs all over the place. But there was one sequence where I'm not entirely sure who it was at the time. I think it was actually, it might have been Jonathan Santucci, but two hitters in front of him drew four pitch walks. I'm not sure if both of them were on only four pitches, but certainly the one right in front of him was a four pitch walk. Clearly the pitcher he's facing is having a tough time throwing strikes. Now he's got two runners on base. Seaver steps to the plate. First pitch, he's hacking. And I think he actually put the ball in play and got a good result. But I was just like, what is the approach here at this point? But, I mean, it makes it fun to watch, but certainly is something that you'll have to monitor moving forward. And I think you're, like, hesitant about both these profiles who we have as, like, mid-first rounders. Kind of speaks to the question marks of this draft class. Like, if you're already this suspect of some of these profiles, you're going to go pretty well. It kind of tells you what you're working with here.
Yeah, and when throwing in someone like a Ryan Waldschmidt, if you throw him into the mix where you don't have this premium position upside, but for me, it's in the looks that I've got of him, it's plus hit, plus power, or border, like at least above average hit for me. Yeah. And like I'm really buying the offense with Waldschmidt. Like he's a good runner once he's underway. He's a good little athlete in left field. Like I probably am, man, it's closer than people would think. For me, at least internally, when comparing Waldschmidt to these two, I think at the end of the day, I'd probably take Vance, first of the three. But then I'd take Waldschmidt second. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. My order of these three would be Seaver, Vance, and then Waldschmidt. And I actually would probably have some decent separation between the first two and Waldschmidt.
Interesting.
I'm just a little less high on the defensive profile and the athlete. And I have some questions about how the swing will work in pro ball, but sell me more on Ryan Waldschmidt, and what should people be keeping in mind when they're watching Waldschmidt in the College World Series, and maybe Kentucky in general, if there are any other players, because you did kind of ID Waldschmidt as a key piece for Kentucky's offense if it's going to get moving and lead them to success. Because Waldschmidt, like, analytically and data-wise and performance-wise, I think he checks a lot of boxes, especially offensively. But I don't know. I don't know if he would be a guy that I'm pulling the trigger on in the first round.
Yeah, he's one I'm really curious to see where he ends up going. But this year for Kentucky, and last summer he tore his ACL on the Cape, like a complete freak injury. Like he was going after a base hit in the outfield and just stepped in a divot and blew it out. Like it wasn't on him at all, but you know, he was on track to have a pretty good summer, I thought, as well. But this year for Kentucky, he's hitting 346 with 17 doubles, 14 jacks, pretty similar K to walk, 24 bags and 46 RBIs in 56 games. He's chasing overall at just a hair over 20%. And that's not, and it's pretty steady for him across the board. Like, it's not a number that's bogged down or inflated by, you know, he doesn't chase against heaters, but he really chases against breaking balls. It is really, really steady across the board and at or under 20% on all pitch types. And I think what with him as well, you know, you also have the present barrel skills and barrel control to go along with these advanced swing decisions. Like, he's making contact in the zone at an 88% clip, 90% against fastballs. He's not struggling at all against velocity. He's proven he can hit it. And, you know, he's also in the box. It's a really simple and compact operation with some explosiveness in it. Like, he does a great job of creating leverage with his barrel, driving the baseball to all fields. Like, you know, the power for me, he's not a metal bat merchant. I think to the pull side, it's borderline plus for me to the pull side. But, you know, he's also hammered some balls into the right center gap. And the pure hit tool, I'm also, I think, on the higher end of the spectrum, where I'm on the lower end with a guy like Seaver King. But what he lacks is he is not this freak athlete. He is more like, I'm a fan of the body. I think he moves better than people think. Like, when he's underway, I know I said it already, but like, he's a good runner and he knows how to run. Like, he's been in that Kentucky base stealing system for a while now, doing shuffle leads and jump leads and all of that. Like, he knows how to run, which I think exacerbates the run tool a little bit. And he's got an advanced baseball sense as well. But we're looking at a potential left fielder long-term, you know, you got to really, really like the bat. And I do really, really like the bat. But if he goes in the first round, which there's been more and more steam on it, it feels like, than ever in the last couple of weeks, and rightfully so with how he's been playing, a team is going to have to feel pretty similar on the bat. Because when you take that away, like, you know, it's what do you have? Where, like, with Vance, if you take the bat out of his hands, you still have a potential gold glove center fielder. So
absolutely.
That's where I'm at on Waldy.
Well, there's the case for Ryan Walshman. So there you guys have it. I'll be curious to see where he goes. And you mentioned there in that kind of final sentence, one question that I also have with Vance Honeycutt's profile is, I've been burned so often by the center field types who have great secondary tools and hit questions. I'll just run down the list for you of some players who I feel a little burned by. Victor Robles, Christian Pache, Drew Jones, Victor Scott to a lesser extent than all those other guys, Pete Armstrong to a lesser extent than all those other guys. But it gets very difficult at a certain point to fall in love with the uber tooled up center field profile with some offensive question marks after you rank Victor Robles 1 and Juan Soto 2 in the first ever prospect handbook you do for Baseball America. that one tends to burn you for a while.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting conundrum. So
Peter, do you have any specific profiles that, like, you should be excited about, but you're not? Because that is like tier one for me at this point. The center field athlete with great supplemental tools and hit question marks. I just am like so out on that profile right now.
I think I'm in a similar boat. Like, it's a very sexy profile.
You're out on that profile too.
Yeah, it's just like I can't get all the way in. It's just like I can't get past a guy that lacks a hit tool. Again, I call me old fashioned, but I need some sort of a hit tool.
For me, I've come down to like, I think we probably overstate the value you get from going from a 60 defender to a 70 or 80. I think that value is actually not as great on field as maybe the difference in like hit tool differences of the same magnitude, if that makes sense. Like, I would probably rather have a fringier solid center field defender if I was confident I was getting the offensive performance. Like, I just think it's easier to find defenders to run out there who can't hit. Like, ultimately I come back to like the hitting is the most important, and really the most important thing is, can you play center field every day? Everything else is gravy. But I think for a while there, especially early on in my time, like, having a shiny 70 or an 80 on your defense, or especially your arm, like, is probably louder on a spreadsheet than the actual value you get on the baseball field.
And that's the thing. It's like with me, and I'm in the exact same camp, and that's why I'm probably higher on Waldschmidt than maybe some or most. It's like I am really confident in the offensive profile and how it's going to translate to the next level, like more so than I am Siver King. And
again, that tracks with your love of a guy like James Tibbs as well, who
exactly
similar, like athlete corner profile questions, but really kind of checks a lot of boxes offensively. So
yeah, you tracks. Just. You know, you got to be able to hit. I freaking hate swing and miss and consistent ugly swings and bad swing decisions. Like, you know, give me a guy who can hit, and that's why I like Waldschmidt so much. But I'm not quite there to put him over Honeycutt. I think that's a little too bold even for my liking. But I would take him over Siver King.
Okay,
100%.
All right. Well, let's circle back. I know I'd mentioned this early in the podcast. We haven't really talked about it, but Braden Montgomery. I mean, how much of a bummer was it just to see him out for the year with his ankle injury? I can't imagine this will impact his stock too much. He was kind of in that top tier of college hitters, but it does just add more question marks to that group. I really think outside of Charlie Condon and Travis Bazana, every single college player ranked in the top 10 range has a significant question mark. Prior to the injury, Braden Montgomery, I think, had the least contact skills of this group. He had a little bit more swing and miss, although I think it was certainly in an area that you're fine with given the power and on base that he gives you. But JJ Weatherholt has his injury questions. Nick Kurtz has his injury questions in addition to a first base profile. Cags has his over aggressive chase, and just honestly like some pure hit question marks. Both the pitchers have question marks. So really a lot of these guys have things to like, but real obvious warts. How much does the injury impact how you view Braden Montgomery, who right now we have as a number five player in the class?
You know, it sucks. And it really, I'm in the camp that you are, where I don't think it affects him at all from a draft standpoint. Like it was it's not like an injury issue type of injury, if that makes sense. Like it was a pretty freak thing where he just blew his ankle out, rounding third and coming home. And it sounds like from Twitter, from what I've seen on there, that he had a successful surgery. He should be back in a couple of months, but I was selfishly really looking forward to seeing him in Omaha and seeing him on that stage with A&M, because I think if it wasn't for him going down and Shane Sadow going down, I probably would have picked A&M to win it all. But to your initial question, it does nothing from a draft standpoint.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in kind of the same boat there. Like, I would be very surprised if this was a significant needle mover. If you were really in on Braden Montgomery prior to this, I don't see any reason why this would change your overall evaluation of him as a prospect. If anything, for me, like, this injury will maybe put more of a spotlight on some of these really talented underclassmen for Texas A&M who we're going to be talking about on the podcast a lot in subsequent seasons. But guys like Jace Laviolette and Gavin Grujovic, Grujovic has been a significantly better hitter in college from the jump than I expected him to be, just given some of the swing and miss questions I had from him as an amateur. He had significant physical tools, a great build as a high school player, and really a strong track record as an underclass hitter in high school. But for whatever reason, I just didn't get the greatest looks in game for him. And he's right now fourth on the team in OPS, one of the better offenses in college baseball this year. But maybe this will just make people who are not already aware of guys like Laviolette and Grujovic kind of the focal point will be more on them in the offense in the absence of Braden Montgomery. So for better or worse, for fans, maybe it's good to shine a light on these guys. For Texas A&M specifically, maybe it thins the lineup a little bit, but they certainly still have plenty of firepower.
Yeah, and those guys are going to really have to step up with him being out, and they already did it in a couple of games, especially in that second game against Oregon where Caden Kent slid in and hit a huge grand slam. But yeah, those Laviolette is there, but like a true freshman like Grujovic, you know, he'll have to grow up pretty fast. The lights are really, really bright on this stage, and Montgomery had experience playing there with Stanford. But yeah, that's obviously a huge loss. And at the end of the day, I think it's just really just a bummer. One, because he's an awesome human being, and two, from a fan of the game perspective, I would have loved watching him play in the College World Series and against those teams. But there's still a ton of talent both in this year and then also in the 25 and 26 class.
Yeah. All right. Any other College World Series prospect either players you want to mention or anything about the CWS specifically before we get into maybe a riser or two?
In the 24 class, no one specifically. I think we hit on the big guys. I think in order just to not bog this down and make it too long, keep an eye on some of the standout sophomores and freshmen that you see. There are a couple on each team, and this is their chance to kind of, you know, to make a final little name before they had another draft year or their sophomore year. So I'm excited from an underclass standpoint as well.
All right. Well, there was one specific player I want to mention as a kind of a buzzy name recently, for just general draft board awareness. We've got him ranked on the 500 now, but it sounds like he's just been phenomenal all spring, and now he's getting a lot of day one talk. And that is, we're going back to the high school shortstop ranks, Peter. I told you the profile I hate, or I don't hate, but I'm terrified of, that center field supplemental tools profile. But I'm still a sucker for high school shortstops, and we've had a number of risers this spring in the high school shortstop demographic, which is good. Guys like Wyatt Sanford, Tyson Lewis, Theo Gillen, Kellen Lindsay, all these guys have kind of made this second tier of high school hitter group pretty interesting. And then Luke Dickerson, a New Jersey-based high school player committed to Virginia. It sounds like he's got a pretty good shot to go in a good spot. I'm not sure if he's as likely to go in the back of the first as Theo Gillen, but it wouldn't shock me today, whereas maybe a month ago that would have shocked me. But he gets great reviews for his physicality. He's also, I think, a state champion hockey player. So he's got that sort of stereotypical hockey player toughness and athleticism. But he's been a great performer this spring. He's got a powerful, compact swing. Some scouts I've talked to think it's hit over power. Talked to some that think it's power over hit. But either way, really exciting offensive tools. And then maybe not a shortstop in the long run, but fast enough certainly for center field. Maybe has a chance to play second base. So as you guys are thinking about like player targets for your favorite teams in the second round, maybe keep in mind Luke Dickerson. And if you're just a draft nick and want to know like who's moving up and who's moving down, like just scanning over our board right now, I think Luke Dickerson has some of the biggest helium. And maybe this is just like a lagging indicator, like for the industry. It might just be like, oh, you're too low on him. That typically is kind of how it happens with us trying to put our boards up in kind of how the industry views these players. We're always a little bit behind the industry. But ideally on draft day, we're caught up. So Luke Dickerson is definitely a name to keep in mind.
Yeah, you know a lot more on him than I do, but I think similar to you, when talking with scouts in the last handful of days, week to 2 weeks, and it's been a few area guys, and they've all given really positive reviews on Dickerson, and just reading up on him and watching him, it's a really, really appealing prospect. Like, I can see the love and see the reason for it. He's a UVA commit, but I am, you know, from what I've heard and what you've told me, it sounds like you know, he might get enough to pull him away from that commitment. So he's been the buzziest name up here in the Northeast for sure.
Yeah, kind of reminds me a little bit of Jackson Merrill, just in the way that Merrill was kind of a late spring riser, if I'm remembering correctly. He went through a bit of a growth spurt and did sneak into the back of the first round, but that's kind of like similar area of the country, like mid-Atlantic. I don't know if you classify New Jersey as like mid-Atlantic or truly Northeast, but for me, like close enough-ish for the high school shortstop, maybe not a shortstop in the long run profile to work. And now Merrill is a center fielder, so maybe it works even better. So yeah, definitely an interesting one. Any other guys that you feel like are moving up boards or players further ranked further down that you're intrigued by?
Yeah, Kyle DeBarge is one of the college ranks that I really, really like. I have for quite some time now, dating back to last spring. He had an excellent season at Louisiana. He plays a lot bigger than his 5'9", 175 or so pound frame suggests. He's a twitchy, really good-looking athlete in the box. There's plenty of bat speed there present. He's a really good runner. There's borderline plus bat to ball skills, especially, you know, barrel control wise, and the end zone contact rate is outstanding. Like from a pure hit standpoint, the tool is really, really advanced, and there's some power there to the left side. has held down shortstop really well for the Raging Cajuns. He might be a second baseman long term, but I don't think that's too much of a word on the profile. There's just a lot that I like, especially from an offensive standpoint and an athleticism standpoint with the barge, where I think, you know, he's probably going to end up going on day one, I would think.
Yeah, he's another guy who's going to move up in our next update. Not entirely sure when that's going to come, but we are going to have kind of a final, maybe a final two, as we just keep getting the feedback necessary to make these moves. But both these guys are that we're talking about, Dickerson, DeBarge, if you look at the BA 500 right now, they're not inside the top 100, but they definitely will be on our next update. DeBarge, like you mentioned, outstanding bats of ball skills. I imagine he'll be a fairly, maybe, I don't know how wide the range of opinions will be, but I know some old school scouts who are just not as high, but teams that are really into like just the performance, the contact qualities you're mentioning, more model heavy teams, I imagine will penalize him less for just the size and the physicality on the field and look more into what he's actually done performance wise. And it's like a 90% end zone contact rate. One thing that I guess has helped him this year is he went from 3 home runs in 2022 to 7 home runs. And now he jumped to 21 in 2024. I know that, like, in the current college environment, home runs are fairly cheap, but he also changed the batted ball profile pretty significantly. He had a 50% plus ground ball rate in each of the first two seasons and just started getting the ball elevated more frequently. That's probably a pretty good recipe for success for most college hitters these days. And he dropped that to a 39.7% ground ball rate, got the ball in the air more than 40% of the time for the first time in his career, and it translated to tripling up on his home run total from 2023. So that paired with the end zone contact and the defensive profile that you're mentioning makes for a pretty appealing player.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you hit the nail on the head where, like, I think the model-oriented teams, this is a profile that will really grade out well on those models, and they'll they'll be a huge fan of DeBarge. I know I am. And I think that the progress that he's made from an offensive standpoint, he has – the question marks remain a little bit, but he's made pretty sizable progress in the areas that he's needed to. So there's a lot trending for him right now as we approach the draft.
Hey, and he's young for the college class, so maybe if the Guardians don't take Travis Bazzana one, they can get like a poor man's Travis Bazzana with the barge with their second round pick, because that fits a lot of traits they tend to like. So, or calling my shot here.
Man, that'd be something.
If that happens, I had great insight into the org's preferences. And if it doesn't happen, it was just a joke, people.
Exactly. It's a win-win.
Cool. Peter, that's kind of all I had on tap for today. We've been about 45 minutes. If you want to plug anything you've got in the works, you want people to be aware of, or if you have any just final comments in our last podcast for the College World Series.
I know. Pretty unbelievable milestone / benchmark that we're here already on the calendar, but just a ton of stuff going on over at baseballamerica.com, whether it be College World Series preview stuff, draft content. If you're a fan of whatever it might be, or your baseball focus is in one specific area, I guarantee you, whether it's writing a piece of writing or a podcast, there's going to be a lot of stuff for you over on the website. So that's, I would suggest going to check it out.
Yeah, definitely just highlight Teddy and Peter's college World Series preview content. There is a significant amount on the site. Superlatives, picks, top prospects to be aware of. Teddy has 8 intriguing players to keep an eye on. So pretty much everything you would need to get prepped for the CWS if you are not already prepped as you listen to this. Definitely take advantage of that. And we really appreciate all the support, whether you're just a listener to the show or you're a BA subscriber. Really thank you for kind of allowing us to do this and call it a job. We are very appreciative of it, and we couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you so much. For Peter, I'm Carlos. I hope you guys enjoy the weekend, enjoy the College World Series, and we will see you next time. So long.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. Oracle.com/bandwidth.